Millie, is there anything you wanted to say? I have a feeling you want to say something.
I'm just going to sit here and cheer.
Okay. All right. Well, it comes that time for our talker, and I've known him for quite a while now. Look at he's like, what is she going to say? I love him to death. I've gotten the pleasure of serving with him on the board and in class, sitting next to him in class, which has been great the last, 5 years, I think. And, you know, he's the president of our church, and he's just always on a spiritual journey, and he's always growing and developing himself and who he is, and he's just an amazing man. And if you haven't really gotten to know him, you really should. Please welcome Spencer.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much. First wanted to say how scary it is because I was walking in and there's Millie and she goes, oh, I came to listen to you talk. So like I bump in there on the sidewalk. So there's no pressure, right? I have so much to talk about because I love this book. This book to me is the book that changed my life. It's called Embraced by the Light. And the author's name is Betty Eady. And I just want to give you a little tiny background. And this, you know, I read this book, 20 years ago, I saw her on Oprah, and the reason why I read the book wasn't about spiritualism at all. It was because the lady was a half-breed, and I grew up as a half-breed too, and she was talking about how her mom was Sioux and her dad was Irish, and how the parents split. She ended up in school and in a Catholic school, and they called them heathens, and they told her they were no good, and all of that kind of stuff, and believe it or not, in my small hometown, I'm from Bishop, California, I grew up and I'd be hanging out with my friends and my friends would say, those stupid Indians, and everybody would look at me because they knew I lived on the reservation. Then I'd get sick of that, so I'd hang out with the Indian kids and they'd go, dang, white people, and then they'd all look at me, right? So it taught me a sensitivity about racism that you don't, you know, when I moved here, I'm just a white guy, right? Everybody thinks, oh, he's white, but in my hometown, I was a half-breed, right? And people knew I was, and my, you know, because of where I grew up. So I actually connected with Betty over that. She's, you know, she looks kind of like me, where she doesn't look very Native American, but her heart is, and I grew up in Native culture, and my heart is too. So what happens is Betty is the mother of five or six. She has a hysterectomy, and she dies in the hysterectomy, and she goes to heaven. And for some reason, she remembers it when she comes back. She gets to meet Jesus. She gets to meet her guides. She gets to meet friends that were there before. And she gets to see a little bit of what life's purpose is and what's going on. And I want to read from you, to you excerpts from the book. And there's so much. I hope I don't run out of time. I'm actually timing myself to make sure I don't go over because it's really just sweet. And as I read this now later, I realize what a spiritualist I am. You know, this is kind of an odd religion for somebody that came from a real solid Christian background to end up to. And now as I read this, I'm like, yeah, I know that's true. I know that's true. I know. And I see it all the time, like in our classes and in our life and in our work. So here she is. She goes, I realized that nobody was aware that I had died. I'd felt an urgency to tell somebody, I'm dead. I thought that no one here knew it. But before I could move, three men suddenly appeared at my side. So she's in the hospital. And her guides appear. They wore beautiful light brown robes. One of them had a hood on the back of his head. Each wore a gold braided belt that was tied around the waist with the ends hanging down. A kind of glow emanated from them, but not unusually bright. Then I realized that the soft glow came from my own body and that our lights merged together around us. And I was not afraid. The men appeared to be about 70 or 80 years old. That's a good age for a pastor, by the way. But I knew somehow that they were on the same scale, something different than Earth's time. The impression came to me that they were much older than 70 or 80 years old, that they were ancient, and I sensed in them a great spirituality, knowledge, and wisdom. I believe they appeared to me in robes to invoke the impression of these virtues. I began to think of them as monks, mostly because of their robes, and I knew that I could trust them. They spoke to me. They had been with me for eternities. They said I didn't fully understand this, but I had a different comprehension of time, let alone eternities. And eternities had always been in the future. But in this case, it was in the past. This was difficult for me to comprehend. I began to see images of my mind a long time ago and the existence before my life on earth, my relationship with these men before, as scenes unfolded in my mind, I knew that I'd known each other for eternities. I became excited, in fact, of pre-earth. We had a Thursday night class, and Millie goes stand in front of, gosh, I'm not going to think of his name right now. And we actually could feel that our lives went as far. Do you remember that class? It was last year, Millie, on Thursday night. That my life went back in time as far as I could remember, and it went forward in time as far as I could remember. And it was a very holy being right in front of us. It was really, really interesting. These friends were some of her best friends. They had been her guardian angels during her life, but they were special. They were also ministering angels. They said that she died prematurely and not to worry, everything would be all right. They communicated her. She felt like they were talking, but then she realized they're not talking. It's something like telepathy or, and that they were communicating on a deeper level. So, Edie's a mother, right? So listen to this, moms, right here. I'm not looking at anybody, Cindy. My only thought was to leave the hospital and go to my family. After so many years of waiting for a family, of working to keep my family together, I was afraid of how I would lose them. I'm skipping a little bit, you guys, because there's so much in this book. I'm trying to pick out all the stuff that teach us about our spiritualism and who we are and what we're doing. So she was afraid of losing her family, or perhaps I was afraid they would lose me. Immediately, I began to look for an exit. I spotted a window and quickly went through it and emerged outside. Soon, I learned that I didn't need to go through the window. I could have left the room at any point. It was only because of my lingering thoughts about being mortal that held her back. She was in slow-moving mode, and then she realized she could go fast. So she flies across town in minutes, right? She gets to her house. She walks in the door. She goes, I see my husband in his armchair reading the newspaper, and I saw my children running up and down the stairs and knew that they were supposed to be getting ready for bed. Two of them were in a pillow fight, and it's normal for bedtime for kids to goof off, right? So she had no desire to communicate with them, but she was concerned about their lives without me, the mom, right? As she watched them individually, a preview of sorts ran through their mind about them. It enabled her to see ahead into each of their lives. She came to know that each of them was on earth for their own experiences. Not for what mom needed, not for the family, but for their own experiences. And that although she had thought of theirs as mine, she had been mistaken. They were individual spirits like myself, with an intelligence that was developed before their lives on earth. Each one had their own free will. Each had to live their life as they choose. She knew that this free will should not be denied them, that they had only been placed in her care. And although she can't recall it now, she knew that her children would have their own life agendas, that they would, when they completed them, they too would finish their stay on earth. She foresaw some of the challenges and difficulties, but knew that these would be necessary for their growth. There was no need for sorrow or fear. In the end, each of her children would all be all right, and it would only be a brief moment before they were together again. Our life here goes like that in spiritual time. Right? And in this little passage that we were reading, don't miss the part about free will. God sent us here to have free will, and we have all of the ability to ask for help, and our guides and spirits and Jesus and everybody will help us, but they're not going to help you unless you ask, because they gave you free will. So you're here free to do it yourself. So she meets Jesus, right? She finishes with the guide. She goes up to heaven. She's hanging out with Jesus, which we've done in class, by the way. Remember that 1 year? He kept coming so many times. He was here like 3 times. So Jesus gently opened his arms and stood back far enough for her to look into his eyes and said, your death was premature. No words ever spoken to her penetrated her more than that. Until then, she thought there was no purpose in life. I had simply ambled along looking for love and goodness, but never really knowing if my actions were right. My aunt said that in class. My aunt came back after she passed and said almost that same thing. Now, within words, we felt a mission, a purpose, and I didn't know what it was, but my life on earth was not meaningless. My time would come when my mission, my purpose, or my meaning for life would be accomplished and there was a mission on earth. And there, I'll give you some examples. This is one of my favorite little stories right here because this just happens every day in life. So Betty says to Jesus, I wanted to know why there were so many churches in the world. Why didn't God give us only one church or one pure religion? That'd be easy to do, wouldn't it? The answer came to her with the purest of understanding. Each of us was told that it is that we are all at different levels of spiritual development and understanding. Each person is therefore prepared for a different level of spiritual knowledge. All religions upon the earth are necessary because there are people who need what they teach. So they're all right. All of them are right. People in one religion may not have a complete understanding of the Lord's gospel and never will have while they're in that religion. But that religion is used as a stepping stone to further knowledge. Each church fulfills its needs that perhaps others cannot fill. No one church can fulfill everybody's needs at every level. It, as an individual raises his or her level of understanding about God, his own eternal progress. He might feel discontented with the religion that he's in at the present church and seek a different philosophy or religion to fulfill that void. When this occurs, he has reached another level of understanding for further truth, knowledge, growth, and opportunity these new opportunities while beginning. Having received this knowledge, I knew that we have no right to criticize any church in any way. They are all precious and important in his sight. And in order to grasp the truth, we need to listen to spirit and let go of our egos. And in that, we grow. Now, Millie is famous. It's so fun to have Millie here, isn't it, you guys? You're going to hear Millie in this next passage. Millie says, watch your thoughts, watch your words, watch your actions. Many of the creative thoughts that have come to life are the result of unseen inspiration. Many of our important inventions and even technological developments were first created in spirit by spirit prodigies. Then the individuals on earth received the inspiration to create the inventions here. She understood that there's a vital dynamic link between the spirit world and mortality, and that the spirits on the other side are needed for our progression. They were very happy to assist us whenever they could. So like it's good for them as well as us. And then with the thoughts, actually, we were given agency to act for ourselves. Our own actions determine our course in our lives. We can alter or redirect our lives at any time. I understood that this was crucial. God made the promise that he wouldn't intervene in our lives unless we asked him. Do you guys all hear that? You have a complete free will, and none of your angels or guides or spirits are going to help you unless you ask. So you hear Millie say ask, too, because they gave you on your own. And if you want help, you get it. And if you want to be on your own, you're on your own. It's awesome. All right. And then, though this omniscient knowledge, he would help us obtain our righteous desires. We were grateful for this ability to express our free will and exercise its power. This would allow us each to obtain great joy or choose that which would bring us our own sadness. The choice would be ours through our own decision. And, you know, this is hard for me to read even still because it's so like the main line Christian. But this is in here, so I wanted to share it because for me it was a little bit of a hard lesson. It's about the flesh. Our earthly selves, however, are constantly in opposition to our spirits. I saw how weak the flesh is, but it is persistent. And although our spirit bodies are full of light, truth, love, they must battle consistently to overcome flesh. And this strengthens them. Those who are truly developed will find a perfect harmony between their flesh and their spirits, and a harmony that will bless them with the peace and give them the ability to help others. And then whatever we became here in humanness is meant as meaningless unless it's done for the benefit of others. Our gifts and talents were given to us to serve. And serving in others, we grow spiritually. So life really is about giving, right? And sometimes it's hard to remember, like to be good. Above all, she was shown that love is supreme. I saw that truly without love, we are nothing. We are here to help each other, to care for each other, to understand, forgive, and serve one another. We are here to have love for every person born on earth. Their earthly form might be black, yellow, brown, handsome, ugly, thin, fat, wealthy, poor, intelligent, or ignorant. But we are not to judge these appearances. Each spirit has the capacity to be filled with love and eternal energy. And in the beginning, each possesses some degree of light and truth that can be more fully developed. We cannot measure these things. Only God knows the heart of man, and only God can judge perfectly. He knows our spirits. We see only temporary strengths and weaknesses, but because of our limitations, we can seldom look into the heart in man. I knew that anything we do to show love is worthwhile. A smile, a word of encouragement, a small act of sacrifice. We grow from these actions. Not all people are lovable, but when we find someone difficult for us to love, it's often because they remind us of something within ourselves that we don't like. I learned that we must love our enemies, let go of anger, hate, envy, bitterness, and the refusal to forgive. These things destroy our spirit, and we will have to account for how we treat others. All right, and then she goes through all kinds of lessons up there. One of the lessons was about laws. And this was that positive energy is basically just what you think it is. Light, goodness, kindness, love, patience, charity, hope, and so on. Negative energy. You guys, can you hear this in Millie's class every time? Can you hear it? Negative is this fun. Negative energy is just what we think it is. Darkness, hatred, fear, Satan's greatest tool, unkindness, intolerance, selfishness, despair, discouragement, and so on. Positive and negative energies work in opposition to each other. And when we internalize these energies, they become our servants. Positive attracts positive, negative attracts negative. Light cleaves to light, and darkness loves darkness. We become mostly positive or mostly negative. Did you hear that? Let me read that again. If we become mostly positive or mostly negative, we begin to associate with others like us. But we have the choice to become positive or negative simply by thinking positive thoughts and speaking positive words. We attract positive energy, and that surrounds us with different people. I saw how a person's words actually affect the energy field around them. The words themselves were vibrations in the air. God, can you hear that too? Yeah. All right. And the one type of energy or another, the person's desires have a similar effect. There's a power in our thoughts. We create our own surroundings by the thoughts we think. Physically, this may take a period of time, but spiritually, it's an instantaneous. Change your thoughts, change your lives, is what she's saying. Wow. If we understood the power of our thoughts, we would guard them more closely. Gosh, I just get so much chill with that, right? Because we get stuck. Don't we get stuck sometimes? And we forget that we can change it. We've all been stuck, right? All right, so about healing, I saw that literally we have the power to affect our own health. I saw that spirit in each of us is powerful, and it can give us strength to the body or ward off illness. Or once the body is sick, we can use our spirit to cause it to heal. The spirit has the power to control the mind. The mind controls the body. All healing takes place from within. Our spirits heal our body. A doctor's hands may perform the surgery, and medicine may provide the ideal circumstances for health. But it's spirit that affects the healing. A body without a spirit cannot be healed. All right, so she was shown the many illnesses of her life that were a result of depression or feelings of not being loved. She saw that she had yielded to negative self-talk, such as, oh, my aches and pains. I'm not loved. I was doing the I'm not loved one on my way here today, you guys. I was really bad. Look at my suffering. And then I saw Millie outside. Yay! suddenly, I saw me at the end of each of these statements. I saw the extent of my self-centeredness, and I saw that I was not only did I claim these negatives by calling them mine, but I opened the door and accepted them as mine. My body then lived through a sort of self-serving prophecy. Woe is me was translated into the body as I am sick. I'd never thought this before. And she had been part of the problem. She then understood that self-talk began the healing process. Once we've identified the illness or problem, we immediately began verbalizing. I'm running out of time. Listen, to her surprise, she saw that most people selected the illness that they would suffer. And for some, the illness would end their lives. Some healing does not come immediately or at all because we need the growth. All experiences for us are good. And sometimes it takes what we would consider a negative experience to help develop our spirits. We were willing, even anxious as spirits, to accept our ailments, illnesses, and accidents to help better serve our life spiritually. She understood that in the spirit world, our earth time is meaningless. The pain we experience on earth is just a moment, a split second of consciousness. Or in the spirit world, we would be very willing to endure it. Our deaths were also often calculated to help us grow. When a person dies of cancer, for example, like my brother did, we often experience a long, painful death that gives opportunities for growth that he could not get otherwise. And I'm telling you, in that experience, I did, you know, see my family different. I got to see a different side of my family when you're doing that, or my aunt passed of cancer too. She knew that her mother had died of cancer, and she understood that she was able to interact with her family members in ways that she wasn't able to do before. She'd grown as a result of her own death, and some people chose to die to help somebody else. I am running out of time, you guys. There's one story in here that changed my life. This book right here. I'm going to skip. So I worked for San Diego Municipal Court. And I worked in the department called misdemeanor arraignment. And that was before the court merged to Superior Court. And there's only one court. There used to be a municipal court and a Superior Court. And I worked in misdemeanor arraignment, which is where all of the cases start. So I would go to work. And I dealt with prostitutes and drug dealers all day long. And I read this thing right when I was in the middle of working there, and it changed my life on how I dealt with people. I have to off the sidetrack tell you, the funniest thing that happens when you work in court is the officer who writes a ticket to the prostitute turns around and writes the same ticket for the John, right? And they schedule them to appear in court at the same time. So there's this really awkward meeting, right? Like, oh, hi, how are you? Every, like, Monday morning or whatever, right? Because that was the funnest part of my job. It's like, oh, I know how they met, right? So anyway, this is the story that I read when I was working in this environment where everybody was a drug dealer or prostitute except for my coworkers that were behind the glass with me, right? So as if to illustrate the principle for me, she's with a guide. They scroll back the heavens and they say, what do you think about this situation? They scroll back the thing and she saw Earth again. This time her vision focused on the street corner of a large city. There I saw a man laying in a drunken stupor on the sidewalk near a building. One of my guides says, what do you see? Why, I see a drunken bum laying in his wallow. I said, not understanding why I had to see this. My guides became excited. They said, now we will show you who he really is. His spirit was revealed to me, and I saw a magnificent man. He was full of light. Love emanated from his being. And I understood that he was greatly admired in the heavens. This great being came to earth as a teacher to help his friend that he had spiritually bonded with. His friend was a prominent attorney who had an office a few blocks away from this corner. Although the drunk now had no recollection of this agreement, his purpose was to be a reminder to the needs of others. I understood that the attorney was naturally compassionate, but seeing the drunk would spark in him to do more for those who needed what he had with his means. So I knew that they would see each other, and the attorney would recognize the spirit within the drunken man, and would be moved to do good. They would never know their hidden roles here, but their missions would be fulfilled nonetheless. The drunk man had sacrificed his time on earth for the benefit of another. So another guy's, in other words, the guy wanted to be a lawyer, you know, fast cars, women, lawyer, blah, 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 and he didn't want to forget to be kind. So him and his friend in heaven said, hey, I'll go with you. I'll remind you to be kind. So his friend laid as a drunk on the street. The attorney had to step over, and it reminded him to be kind. Isn't that an amazing story? And the thing that goes on to say is her escort spoke to her again, bringing out of her thoughts. She said that just because we lacked per knowledge, we should never judge another. Those who passed by the drunk on the corner could not see the noble spirit within. So judged by outward appearances, I had been guilty of this kind of judgment, silently judging others on their own wealth or outward abilities. I saw that it had been unjust, and I had no idea what their lives were like, or more importantly, what their spirit was like. And our strength is found in charity. And I read that story, and I stopped, like, judging people. There were, like, drug dealers in front of my face all day long. There were prostitutes in my face all day long. And I was like, okay, they're on their path. They're doing their God work. I have no idea what it is, right? And so if we can take nothing away from my talk that Kimberly's now tapping her watch on.
She is.
I'm actually over you guys. I hope that you love this book as much as I did. It's a life changer for me, and it's actually out in our library in the carriage house. And thank you for giving me this time.
Thank you, Spencer. That was really good. I've heard about that book, but I've never read that book. And I've always heard that story. I never realized it came from that book. So thank you.